Tut, that lotus, Kinjalkam, petals, Tadamshanam, portions of Krishna. Tut, that lotus, Patrani, the leaves of that lotus, Shriyam, the gopis headed by Srimati Radharani, Api, also. Translation. The core of that eternal realm Gokul is the hexagonal abode of Krishna. So when they talk about hexagonal abode of Krishna, which is represented by the yantra and also represented by the mantra, the yantra is this. You see in the center is a circle, klim, it's Krishna and Radha and Krishna. Then they're surrounded by these words, Krishnaya, Govindaya, Jana, Vallabha, Swaha. But those make six sides, right? There's a little hexagon inside there. When they say the hexagonal figure, some of the verses we've already read, the hexagonal figure, Satkona. So that's it. There it is. Six sides. Just like a honeybee. Honeybee makes his beehive, you know, honeycombs. And you get sometimes in honey in the wax. It's shaped like that. Six-sided. So in this core, the center of that eternal realm of Gokula. So this verse is talking about in the center of that hexagonal abode. So hexagonal, you see it. There it is. Its petals are the abodes of the gopis. So those petals, those eight little petals, those are the abodes of the abodes, means the places where the gopis live. And on this particular yantra, it has their names there with their bijam mantra. You can see Vishakha Lalita, etc. Its petals are the abodes of the gopis who are a part and parcel of Krishna, to whom they are most lovingly devoted and are similar in essence. The petals shine beautifully like so many walls. The extended leaves of that lotus are the garden-like dams, that is, the spiritual abode of Sri Radhika, the most beloved of Krishna. The transcendental abode, transcendental Gokul, is shaped like a lotus. The eternal world is like a hexagonal figure. In that, the entities Sri Radha and Krishna, appearing in the form of a mantra consisting of 18 transcendental letters, are centered. So that is repetition. The mantra is right there. Gopal mantra, Krishnaya Govindaya. The propagating manifestations emanating from the chit potency are present there with the said entities as the center. That can be also said in a little bit different way. Radha and Krishna's intimate servants and associates, however all expansions of them, are surrounding them. Sri Radha Krishna is the primary cause or the seed himself. Gopal Tapani says, Omkar signifies the all-powerful Gopal and his potencies. And Klim is the same as Omkar. Hence, Kambija, or the primary cause of all love, is connotative of the entities Sri Radha and Krishna. In other words, the Klim Bija, or the Kam Bija, Klim, is a desire seed which expresses the transcendental reality of Radha and Krishna. The cause of all love means the desire seed. Of course, also, that is the cause of all love. All bhavas, all loving relationships, they're simply manifestations and emanations from the love between Radha and Krishna. And they reflect different aspects and moods and feelings of that love as they expand out from Radha and Krishna. And that's the transcendental calm of the spiritual world, which is known as prema. But when that same transcendental divya calm crosses the Viraja River and comes into this world, then that's called the perverted love. And we have love, desire for love between man and man, woman and woman. All the five expressions of love are there. You know, Vasya, Sakya. So the original, the cause of all causes, is this love. So this verse, and it discusses the spiritual world, which is discussed more in verse 5. And especially discusses Klim, the Klim Mantra. So I have some points I want to read in my notes about that. The thing is that the whole idea when we say the word Klim is a bija, is that bija means seed, so within a seed everything is there. It's like you have a banyan seed, so within the banyan seed everything is there, or say a mango seed. Within a mango seed you have the branches, the tree, the roots, the leaves. The flowers and the fruits are also there, and another seed is also there. The whole thing is there. The bija mantra Klim, when we chant Klim, it actually contains everything is there. That's why the acharyas, they give different commentaries on Klim, and we'll read it. And they draw so many meanings out of this one word, Klim. And we're chanting Klim, and whatever meaning we get, we get. But the acharyas, they show us that just like a seed, like we see, one person sees the seed of a banyan tree or the seed of a mango tree, and he just sees, oh, it's a seed. All this is a seed. Another person, he sees a mango seed and he says, oh, there's a mango. There's a fruit. There's a whole tree. Everything is there. It's compressed. So this is the idea that's mentioned in this Klim mantra. This is the pivot or the center. The whole Klim is an energy. Everything is within the seed of Klim. Everything, all the constituent parts are within that seed. The whole mantra, in other words, the whole mantra expands from that. Klim is, that's why it's in the center. The center of everything is Radha and Krishna. The center of all the spiritual worlds, which we'll see, the center of the center of the center is Braja Gokul, and it's Radha and Krishna, and it's Klim. And from the Klim mantra, all other, everything expands. That's the main point of this verse, because it talks about Krishna's associates, the gopis and everyone that reside in these petals. So they're simply expansions of the personal forms of Radha and Krishna, all their associates. So the whole mantra, everything is there. And that one word, Klim, everything is there. That's why we mentioned that some people, they chant one mantra and they get perfection. And the yogis, among the yogis, they chant Omkara. They chant Om and get perfection. That's why the Jiva Goswami mentions that Om is so much stress, the Pranava Omkara. It's called the Mahavakya, the great vibration of the Vedic literature, the great mantra. So yogis, they'll just chant Om. And many of us maybe had the experience before we came to Krishna consciousness. We are in different yoga groups, and they were also favoring this mantra of Om. But Jiva Goswami, as a purport, explains that this Om equals to, is the same as Krishna. Because Om is the sound of Krishna's flute also. But it doesn't, when it comes, it explains that it comes as Krishna's flute, and within Krishna's flute is the sound of Klim. And when Klim crosses the Viraja River, it becomes Om. So it's like Om and Klim are the same, but on this side, of, in the material world, Klim appears as Om. So those that are chanting Om, if they're chanting very with a touch of bhakti, that Om will bring in the Klim. So many, we find many devotees that are now bhaktas, they were also, they didn't have any contact with Klim or Kam Gayatri or Gopal Gayatri or Krishna, but they had contact with Om. It's a very common mantra, especially in the 60s and 70s. Everyone was Oming all over the place, right? I can remember people would do like that. They would Om circles. It was famous because we were in university then, and they would have Om circles where everyone, at least where we went, and everyone would hold hands all together, all this, you know, young men and ladies, and they would chant Om at different times. To create good vibration for world peace. And they even had they had International Om Day. I remember that they have a different day, so everyone around the world was chanting Om on the same day. I like that. So this is why Jiva Goswami stresses that this Omkara is Klim, but Klim is, of course, much more. It's Om and everything else. So this, the letters are given a breakdown or discussed. I can read something from this book. And it says the K means Krishna and the L means Radhika. And the I means their sweet exchange of prema. And the M, according to Jiva Goswami, represents sadhakas, like we say, klim. Jiva Goswami says the M, that's us. So it's Radha and Krishna, and the devotee or the liberated soul is also there with Krishna and with Radha. And that's the M. So the M represents, you know, the sadhaka. Or, as Vishwanath and others explain, they say that the M represents the embrace of Radha and Krishna. And the bindu, because there's a chandra bindu, means like a dot. When you write it, there's an M with a dot above it. So that represents the kiss of Radha and Krishna when they're embracing, the kiss. So there are many discussions in this, some purports the word klim in this book, Gayatri Mahima Madhuri. And they explain that the word klim, just to summarize them, save time, is that in Gotamiya Tantra it explains that klim represents the form of Krishna. So each letter actually represents the body of Krishna. That's why we say klim contains everything. Some of the main points of these verses from Brahma Samhita that we can drive, of course, is the philosophy of what's being represented, describing the spiritual world, the nature of the spiritual world, but also the significance and power of these mantras, because these Pancharatrika mantras, Gopal Mantra, Kam Gayatri, are chanted by all classes of Gaudiya Vaishnavas. And according to their adhikar and their surrender and their conception and understanding, they get different results. So we have like an extraordinarily powerful mantra. There's a whole Upanishad written about the Gopal Mantra. And this is a very rare thing, Gopal Tapani Upanishad. So we've been given something very special, something very rare, but then how many of us actually even chant the mantras we've received? This is one of the limbs of sadhana, is to actually chant these mantras. So the one thing we'll derive is the great power. One word of one of the mantras which we have is so powerful, can reveal so much. There's unlimited energy there. And we can actually tap into it and realize it. And that's the whole idea of chanting mantras. Mantras are supposed to transform the consciousness and transform the heart and character when you actually experience it. There's no realization of the mantra. We can chant so many mantras. You'll see it whenever there's puja, wherever there's worship, whether it's... Because when we talk about sadhana, we talk about regulated worship. So there's regulated worship, some regulations and regulated worship in Vaidhi, and some regulated worship for Raghunuga or Rag Sadhana. So all classes, whether they're advanced or neophyte, they're doing some regulated sadhana. But without realization, there's no point. It's all a waste of time. So we must be very concentrated and diligent in our practice. We see the six Goswamis when they were meditating on their guru mantras and different diksha mantras that they received, they were so keen on finding a concentrated atmosphere. Sanatana Goswami and other Goswamis, they would go underground. They would find some cave somewhere and go underground to get an absolutely quiet atmosphere to try to find, you know, to actually meditate on these things. Because meditation is so important to attain something valuable. So there's japa meditation, which is actually meditation on Gayatri. Then there's meditation on the holy name, chanting japa. So that's one point we can derive. So many other points are there. So in the verse it mentions this Patrani Shriyam. So Patrani Shriyam means, Patra means leaf and Shriyam means the gopis, right? Or eternal associates. So the Jiva Goswami gives a discussion of that. What is that Patrani Shriyam? And I have some description of that I can read also. Because now Lord Brahma is starting to describe the actual nature of the spiritual world, beginning with the center point. The obvious point is the center point, because everything expands from the center. So first in this verse he's been talking about Krishna and Radha and Krishna in the center. Now he's going to talk a little bit about their particular abodes in the center. Then next verse 5 is about what's beyond that, which is the abodes of Mathura, Dwarka. Then beyond that, the Chaturvyuha, and that's in verse 5. So the whole idea is that Gokula, or the spiritual world, is a lotus flower. It's shaped like a lotus flower. So a lotus flower has a center and has so many petals surrounding it. So we can try to visualize. So when you see the center here, the Acharyas explain, you see Radha and Krishna's center. So the center, that hexagonal abode that's described by Brahma, has a name. It's called Nandagram. So that's Nandagram in the center. And each abode has a particular flavor or bhava or rasa that it nourishes and which it serves as a foundation. So basically, it's described that Nandagram is a place for Vatsalya Ras, but also Madhurya Ras has its beginning there and expands from there. Because very much near Nandagram is Yavat. And Yavat is where Radharani is there. So when Krishna, he's in the morning time, Krishna's in Nandagram, Radharani, she's in Yavat. And she's looking, she goes in the top, as soon as the sun is coming up, she goes to the top of the palace, the Chandrashalika, which is a tall, watchtower. It's a room on the top of the palace. Palaces all have these. Even you go to Rajasthan, you see it. There's a room on the very top. So she would stand there, and she would look in the direction of Nandagam. And she would think, oh, soon I'll go there. And why she was feeling so much separation, because it's been maybe an hour or so, only hardly an hour since she's been separated from Krishna, from the Nishant Leela. But she's feeling so much separation. And she's burning in fire. She's like, just like thousands of, sitting in the middle of thousands of fires, just burning up, just, you know, a fever of separation. And then the gopis, they take her there, because she goes every day and she cooks. And when she goes to Nandagam, that's why they say that Nandagam is where Madhurya Ras, although it's a seat of Vatsalya Ras, parental love between Nanda and Yashoda and Krishna, it's also Madhurya Ras expands and begins from there and expands from there. So when Radharani comes to Nandagam and she starts cooking, and she's surrounded by so many stoves. It's like here in a Didi kitchen, one devotee will cook on 10 stoves. There's 10 stoves there in a Didi kitchen, so they'll be making burfi in one, and halava in another one, and sabjis in three, and 2 rices on another one. Because I've seen Bhuvaneshwar there cooking, you know, using all 10 stoves at the same time. So what to speak of Radharani? She can use 10 stoves, 20 stoves, 50 stoves, 108 stoves. You know, so she's surrounded by so many stoves because she's cooking hundreds of preparations. And there's so much fire because everything's being cooked on cedar wood, aloe wood or cedar wood. And so that's wood fires are very hot. And so there's so much fire, she's perspiring. And different manjaris are fanning her and trying to cool the perspiration and give her some relief. But those thousands, those 20, 30, 40, 50 fires that she's cooking with, she feels like she's bathing in an ice-cold mountain stream. And I'm bathing in an ice-cold mountain stream because I'm bathing in that cool stream of Krishna Milan or Krishna Sangha. That refreshing, soothing balm of Krishna's darshan. Because if I just stop for a second, and I peek through the lattice window, like we have these lattice windows here, right? You look through these wire windows, pretend they're lattice windows. I can look through there and I can see Krishna in the other room. So then I feel so much the balm, so much satisfied and happy. So this Nandagam, and then after Krishna has his breakfast, then Radha and Krishna, they meet at Guptakund. Guptakund is on the west side of Nandagam. And so this is where they actually have their first morning milan of the day. No, meeting, intimate meeting. This is the yoga pit. It's a place for yoga pit meditation, Guptakund, in the morning. So there, at that place, they make plans for all the Madhurya Ras, for all the Madhurya pastimes for the whole day. That's why they say Nandagam is in the center, although it's primarily Vatsalya Ras. It is also the place where Madhurya Ras has its beginning, and Madhurya Ras expands from there. Because naturally everything expands from the center, including Madhurya Ras, which includes all the other rasas. So that center dham is Nandagam. Beyond that are the petals, and the petals represent, as it says, Patrani Shriyam. Petals represent the abodes of the gopis. Because they, as you know, each gopi, they appear in different villages. Just as soon we'll have Radhastami. So in Radhashtami, of course, Radharani appeared in Ravel, and it's celebrated in Ravel and also in Barsana, that festival. And different Sakis appeared in different villages, just like Vishakha Sakhi, she also appeared. On what day? On Radhashtami. What time? 12 o'clock. You know, we never hear anyone saying, oh, I'm going to celebrate Vishakhashtami. No, it's Radhashtami. Just like no one says, I'm going to Shamakund. Oh, where are you going? I'm going to Shamakund. No, Radhakund. Well, there's another Kund there. Yeah, but that other Kund, it's whatever. It's Radhakund. Or they say, what is it when you write the village post office, it says post office Radhakund. Not that everybody lives on Radhakund's side. Many people live on the Shamakund side. But all their postage comes to Radhakund. So in the same way, we don't say Vishakhashtami, although it is. So in Unchagaon, they're also celebrating the appearance of Vishakha. So the Rishvasis, even today, what they do is there's a calendar which explains, you know, on this Ekadasi, on this Shuklapad, and this Tritiya, and one day after the other, over about a two-week period, all the Sakhis appear. Like Lita Sakhi, of course, appears about 27 days before Radharani. So there are parties that go from village to village. They go to Chitsoli, which is the village where Mankutir is and Morkutir. Everyone knows Morkutir, Mankutir, Sankarikor, and Barsana. So they go there in Chitsoli and they celebrate Chitra Sakhi. So she has her petal. So that petal of Chitra Devi on this yantra or lotus represents Chitsoli. Chitsoli is her village. So on that day, everyone goes there and they have a big celebration of her birthday. And they do they sing Brijbhas songs, and the different people decorate and they have dramas, and then they go from village to village. And people come from all over the world sometimes to follow this program. And these devotees and record the music because they sing different bhajans to Lita Sakhi, bhajans to Chitra Sakhi, village by village. So it's a whole cultural experience. And when they go in each village of the particular Sakhi, they all have bhav for that Sakhi. All the Brijvasis that live there. Although to us, we think that they just drive tractors and churn yogurt and stuff. But when these festivals come, when it's their village, Unchagaon or Chitsoli and all the other different villages where the different Sakhis appear, which are their abodes, which are their petals, their abodes, they have a whole pastimes that they perform there. And of course, also, this has different significance. It represents their abodes surrounding Nandagaon, and it also represents, because there is the yoga pit for Nandagaon, there's a yoga pit for Radhakund, and there's a yoga pit for the Govindastali or Vamshivad. So when these same spiritual yoga pit comes to Radhakund, then these eight petals, which is described in this verse, or discussing this word in the verse Patrani Shriyam. So this Patrani Shriyam, the Patra means the leaf or the petals, eight petals, and Shriyam means the gopis. So when this yoga pit comes to the midday pastimes, Madhyan Leela at Radhakund, then these petals become the eight kunjas of the Sakhis. Those are their abodes. Those are where they have those particular abodes, Lalita's Kunj, Vishakha Kunj, Vishakhananda, it's called Vishakhananda Kunj, Lalitananda Kunj. That's where they receive Radha and Krishna and they engage in different pastimes there. And those are described in the Govinda Lilamrita. So Jiva Goswami explains this, he gives this whole explanation about this Patrani Shriyam. Let me just read a little bit of summary here. The petals of the lotus flower are residents of the gopis, which are expansions of Radharani, Ladini Shakti. Each Sakhi gives pleasure to Krishna in a particular way. But Srimati Radharani is an unlimited reservoir of all transcendental qualities. Radhakund and Shamakund are also petals of the lotus of Braj. Those are particular abodes. Just like we said, the center is Nandagaon, and then these are different villages. So also one of those petals is Radhakund itself. And then within Radhakund are these kunjas, and it's like the center, the center, the center. Only the gopis and confidential gopas can go to these particular places of the conjugal affairs of Radha and Krishna, Radhakund and Shyamakund. The stamens, because it's a lotus flower, stamens are the little extensions in the center of a flower. They're like pathways between the lila spots of the petal. They're further expansions of the petals. In other words, other petals are places like Kamyavan and Bajravan and Bilvavan. All their different forests are also petals of the lotus flower where the cowherding pastimes go on. Of course, Govardhan is also there. So then, this Then also this principle of the lotus flower we discussed before about how the devotees are able to move very quickly from one place to another because the lotus opens and closes like it does every day. So Sanatana Goswami is described as sometimes he was here at Dwadasaditya Tila, and in the morning of one day he would go to Mathura and do Madhukari, bake some alms, some flour, some flour. He would make these bhati, these wheat balls. Then after that he would go from Mathura back to Vrindavan. Then he would go to Govardhan, and he'd do parikrama of Govardhan, a very large parikrama, which was like 35 kilometers or something. Very, very large circle. He would take in Chandra Sarovar, and so, big, big circle. And then from there, he would come back to Vrindavan, all on the same day. And this was this is described, Bhakti Ratnakar and other scriptures. It's described it was about 100 kilometers in one day. And so then people, they say, well, how is that possible? And they say, because for the eternal associates of Krishna and Krishna's liberated souls, they can move effortlessly throughout the holy Dham of Vrindavan. So because for them, it's open like this. So Mathura is over here for him. When he goes to Mathura and does Madhukari, and Govardhan's over here. But then when he wants to go to Govardhan for Seva, then all of a sudden the lotus of Braj closes. And then Mathura touches Govardhan. So it's not like he was running like an Olympic runner. So he did 100 kilometers in one day. He was walking slowly, stopping here and there, rolling in the dust at different places, offering different prayers. So the same way, this is how Radha and Krishna are also able to move. And there are many stories you'll hear in Braj about different great Siddha Mahatmas, liberated souls. Someone will say, oh, I saw Kishori Baba this morning in Barsana. Acha. What time? I saw him at 7 o'clock. But I saw him at 6 o'clock in Ravel. Acha. And then another devotee will say, well, I saw him at 11 o'clock at Govardhan. So they'll see the same person in many places. So besides Sanatana Goswami, there have been many devotees over the years, and great devotees in Braj, that have been able to experience this phenomenon of the living lotus of Vrindavan, of expanding and contracting and moving here and there. Of course, for us, it may be practically impossible just to get from our room to Mangalarti. But at least for it may be very hard to get out of our room and make it to 1 kilometer to Mangalarti or to wherever. But somehow for these souls they could move so far all over Braj. So the lotus of Braj, it facilitates Krishna's movements. And how is it possible? Well, just like if you're an invalid and you can't move, say you have broken legs and you're on the bottom of a building and you want to go to the top of a building, you can't walk, then a big strong person comes and he says, oh, get on my back, and he runs up the stairs and he takes you to the 10th floor in like 2 minutes. Now you have broken legs. Now you could get to the top of the building by crawling slowly on your hands and knees up each flight, but this big strong man put you on his back and he took you up to the top in five minutes, or 1 minute. So that big strong man is Balaram, because Balaram is the chit potency, which is mentioned in the purport. It talks about the chit potency, right? That's the next verse. But so Balaram is this potency of this lotus flower. Krishna wants to go from one place to another, so Balaram carries him. It's all personal. It's not like, how does the lotus flower expand and close? It's because everything is fully conscious. So Balaram is expressing himself in the form of a transcendental lotus flower, but he's not different from the Lord. Balaram is the holy abode. So according to the desires and needs of Krishna, the lotus expands or contracts. The planet itself is fully conscious and aware and knows Krishna's every desire. So Gokula Dham cooperates fully with the Lord to fulfill all his desires. If we develop our consciousness, we can also move about in Braja very easily. Sometimes devotees had the experience of going on Govardhan Parikrama, and they go around and they go, it takes 5-6 hours, and sometimes they can go around in 3 hours. And there's this, because I had the experience of doing Parikrama and Govardhan, like for one karti, going like almost every day till my feet gave up. And it was taking some time. And I'd start, and some days I would come back, and it was like very fast. And I don't, I don't know, time shrunk or my watch didn't work or something. But I had the experience, it was an effortless walk. In other words, the experience was that we walked around Govardhan, it was totally effortless. We finished, we didn't feel like we went around. You know, I've had that experience. And I think everyone had, you know, you do different experiences. Your consciousness is in a certain place, but all of a sudden your finishedness, I don't know, maybe it was fast, it was maybe fast or not, but the end result was you don't feel exhausted, you feel completely like, you know, you're ready to go around a second time. And there are devotees like that that live at Radhakund, they go twice in a day. They go 2 times a day around Govardhan. And now they do other things too. I mean, they don't feel any difficulty. That's how many 50 kilometers? How many kilometers is that? 2 times around Govardhan? 42 something. That's pretty good. And the person that doesn't look tired. Looks pretty blissful. If there's any questions, anyone wants to ask a question?
Telling us about mantra.
You see, whenever you have a gathering of saints and sages, as we have here, so many saintly people, they're all different levels of saintly personalities. When Shuka Goswami was speaking in the Bhagavatam, his father there, Vyasadeva was there, Vasishtha Muni was there, Vishwamitra Muni was there, Lord Shiva was there, everyone was there. From all over the universe when Shukadeva was speaking. And he was looking around, then he was thinking what to speak and how to speak and trying to contain his own inner bhavas and ecstasies. The natural will arise when he begins to describe his Ishtadeva Krishna, Lord Krishna, the glories of Krishna. So he was very careful when he came to the actual center of the whole essence of Bhagavatam, Vraj Leela and Vrindavan Leela, then he became very conscious and self-controlled how he would speak. So this person has asked a question, well, I can see Hare and Krishna and Maha Mantra means Radha and Krishna, but where is Ram in the mantra, Hare Ram, this is Balaram, or how does this fit in? So of course for some other saints in this audience, this is no problem for them. But we can see that we're sitting amongst a varied group. Some people, we can't even understand what their consciousness is. It can be so high. And other people have other consciousness. As we say, we don't know the pains and pleasures. You don't know my pains and pleasures. And I don't know your pains and pleasures. What to speak of my consciousness or your consciousness. So, in different discussions, Prabhupada has mentioned in some tapes and letters about the meaning of Ram as referring to, in even a purport, he says Ram can be Balaram or Lord Ram. But our Param Guru Maharaj, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, and also Srila Prabhupada, when he's asked on the point, if he was If you were to receive initiation from Prabhupada, and he would give the beads, and you asked, what does the Maha Mantra mean? He would not mention anything about Balaram or Ram. He would say, this mantra means, O Radha and Krishna, O Mother Hara, O Energy of the Lord, O Ladini Shakti, O Srimati Radharani, please engage me in pure devotional service to Krishna. Right? This is basically how Prabhupada described the meaning of the Maha Mantra. Anyone disagree? Everyone agrees. So when we actually are discussing our mantra, our guru mantra, is Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. This is one of our guru given mantras. Guru means Chaitya Guru, Diksha Guru, Shiksha Guru. This mantra can come and from any side. And just like if you're a Nimbarki, one of their mantras is the Radha Krishna Maha Mantra, right? The Radha Sham. Radha Sham, Radha Sham, Sham Sham, Radha Radha. Radha Krishna, Radha Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Radha Radha. That's their Maha Mantra. So for them, Hare is Radha. And for them, Ram is Sham. And for them, Krishna is Krishna. But for us, Ram is Radhika Raman. They have Sham, we have Radhika Raman. We also have Sham over there. Narada Muni Bhajana Vina Radhika Ramana Name. Right? Narada Muni, he's one of our friends, right? He's one of us. So his Vina, although his Ishtadeva is Narayan, he's also he plays these things too, you know? His clacker things. Narayana, 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 Narayana. He's playing that, but his Veena that was given to him by Saraswati, Divya Saraswati, his Veena is playing another song. Right? Bhaktivinoda Thakur describes in one bhajan, which Prabhupada sings on one of his vintage tapes, Narada Muni Bhajana Veena. Then Prabhupada gives a purport. He says, Narada Muni has a Veena, and his Veena is vibrating eternally the names of Radhika Raman, Radhika Raman, Radhika Raman. So Rama in the Maha Mantra means Radhika Raman, which has a twofold translation. That person who gives pleasure to Radhika, or that person who receives pleasure from Radhika. Krishna, who is known as Radhika Raman, who gives pleasure to Radhika, or Krishna is Radhika Raman or Radha Raman who receives pleasure, topmost pleasure from Srimati Radharani. So that's how we understand the mantra, and we should meditate in that way. Because if we meditate on the mantra's meaning something else, then that mantra will produce something else. Which also the same thing with this Kam Bija, which we didn't mention, but in some of this Gayatri Mahima Madhuri, the Acharyas explain that this Kama Bija it's a seed of desire. This Kleem mantra is very powerful. So as Brahma describes later in the development of Brahma Samhita, he says you can chant the Kleem Gayatri or the Kleem Bija mantra, and it will fulfill your material desires or your spiritual desires. Because Kam means desire, it's the seed of desire. So if our desire is a particular bhav, then when we chant Ram's name, we may think of Balaram, if we're interested in that particular bhav, which Balaram means Sakya bhav. So Hare Krishna Maha Mantra will draw down the meaning of Sakya Ras from that. But Prabhupada basically gave us the meaning of Madhurya Ras, so we approach Radha and Krishna, then as we become purified, then whatever our particular inclination or bhava is, then that will also be given by this Maha Mantra, which Prabhupada said is non-different from the Gopal Mantra, or meditating on Maha Mantra is the same as meditating on Gopal Mantra, which contains the Kleem, or the seed of desire. So chanting Hare Krishna Mantra also contains the seed of desire. So when you're chanting Hare Krishna Mantra with the desire of the service of Balaram, then you'll get that. You see? And Prabhupada generally presented the meaning of Hare Krishna Maha Mantra in connection to Radha and Krishna. And, O Ladini Shakti. O energy of the Lord. Energy means Ladini Shakti. Anandamayi. Premamayi. Radharani. please engage me in the service of Krishna, Shyam Sundar Damodar Madhav. We'll discuss a little bit about Chit Shakti. We're just finishing up from verse 4. In the purport, the basic point of the verse is that about the Klim Bija mantra, and also how all the associates of Krishna are basically expansions from him, Chit potency. That's what's mentioned in the purport. Rupa Goswami gives a very interesting description. You see in the purport, in verse 4, the Radha and Krishna's intimate servants and associates are all expansions of them, are surrounding them. What it says, the other way you can say it, is the propagating manifestations emanating from the chit potency are present there. So Rupa Goswami, he explains, and he gives a definition of chit shakti, because generally we associate chit with Satchit Ananda. So Sat means eternal, chit means knowledge, and Ananda means pleasure. So he says that actually this chit potency means bhava, prema. In a very interesting way he describes it. So we'll just read it, just for contemplation, consider it. Chit potency generally means gyan or knowledge. Like we say samvit, right? Samvit, sandini, and ladini. So the sandini potency is Balaram, samvit potency is Krishna, and ladini potency is Radharani. In this verse, we can understand how Krishna and his eternal associates are all of the same spiritual essence, Chit Shakti. Radharani, Balaram, Nanda Maharaj, Mother Yashoda, they're all Chit Shakti. So what is that Chit Shakti? On one level, Chit Shakti or Chit Potency means knowledge. They're made of spiritual knowledge, spiritual stuff, spiritual substance. But on another level, they're made of bhava. They're simply made of prema. So this is what Rupa Goswami brings out. The internal potency of Krishna is divided again into three divisions. The Supreme Lord has three primary potencies, Antaranga, Bahiranga, and Tatastha, right? Marginal. The internal potency is divided again into three divisions. So the Antaranga Shakti, or the internal potency, spiritual potency of Krishna, has three divisions. Sandini, this is Balaram, right? Balaram is the personification or the embodiment of Sandini. He maintains, this is the potency which maintains and expands the spiritual world. It manifests Krishna and his associates, and the forms of his associates, such as Nanda Maharaj, Yashoda, the bed, his flute, etc. The second aspect of the internal potency is called Samvit, potency by which Krishna understands everything and enables others to understand Krishna and his multifarious potencies. That's why we say when one advances in bhakti, when actually contacts Vishuddha Sattva means this bhakti potency, bhakti shakti. And bhakti has samvit and ladini. So when one contacts actual pure bhakti, Vishuddha Sattva, or pure bhakti, then he understands Krishna, then he's full of the ability, has the ability to actually love Krishna, particular rasa, which is the samvit and ladini. So this samvit is the spiritual potency which enables one to understand Krishna. Now we're kind of understanding Krishna like in a shadow way, not really understanding. And this potency expands the different forms of Godhead, the samvit potency. The ladini potency, the bliss potency, is personified as Srimati Radharani. She gives pleasure to Krishna and pleasure to Krishna's devotees. So when one feels any kind of spiritual pleasure, it's actually it's the presence of Radharani's potency, ladini shakti. Vishuddha Sattva means a spiritual potency which is uncontaminated by any modes of nature. It's unalloyed pure goodness or spiritual goodness. Sometimes the three potencies of Krishna are called Satchit Ananda. Like in the first verse, we had Ishvara Paramakrishna Satchit Ananda Vigraha. His Vigraha is Satchit Ananda. So Satchit Ananda is also this Sandini, Sambit, and Ladini. And we're made of that also, right? The Jiva is also, the Tatastha Jiva is Satchit Ananda. That is our nature. The Prabhupada said it in the material condition, we're Asat, Achit, and Nirananda. He made a very interesting play on the definition of the pure Atma, the liberated soul, is Satchit Ananda. But us, we're Asat. We're moving from one Asat body to the next, one temporary body to the next. We're Achit. We're not illuminated with pure spiritual knowledge. We're mostly full of doubts, confusions, and ignorance. And if we learn a little bit, as soon as we learn a little bit, then it creates more doubts. We learn a little bit, then we have some doubts, and we learn something, and it removes those doubts. And then we learn some more, then that creates more doubts and more questions. This is the irony of it all. Until we finally get the full illumination. It's kind of like the electricity in Vrindavan. Sometimes it comes on very brightly, and you see very clearly. And sometimes it comes on like a candlelight. Your light bulb looks like a candle. The same light bulb, and you can't see, and everything's a little hazy, a little unclear. And then it comes on very bright. But sometimes everything looks very bright and clear in Krishna consciousness, and sometimes things become very hazy and doubtful and unsure. Because we haven't actually, because we're only touching sometimes the sun comes in our window, sometimes it doesn't. So sometimes a ray of this chit potency will shine on our heart. And then sometimes, because it's very tiny, and we're also made of this chit potency, but we're very tiny, and we can become eclipsed by the Rahu of Maya. Just as the powerful sun appears to be eclipsed by the Rahu planet, who has no substance. He's considered to be a shadow. Rahu. So Maya is like a shadow, but somehow it eclipses our pure consciousness, our chit, our ability to perceive and understand Krishna. So Rupa Goswami explains that the sat potency represents Krishna, actually represents Krishna's form, his face. And the chit potency represents knowledge, or represents actually different bhavas and anandas. Bhavas. Bhavas means different mellows of devotion. And Ananda means Radharani, which is the highest mellow of devotion, is Mahabhav. So then he says, generally, the general meaning of Sat means, like you say, Chit. Chit means knowledge, right? But he says that actually the Chit potency of Krishna is Bhava. It's because Krishna is ultimately made of love. Then he explains how the different levels of prema are included when they say chit shakti. Sneha man, pranaya rag, anurag, bhav, mahabhav. Mohan bhava, madan, akya bhava. All these bhavas. This is all chit shakti. All these different bhavas. Sat is Krishna, Ananda is Radharani, and the chit is their exchange of bhavas. So when we say Satchit Ananda, or as this verse talks about in the purport, the chit potencies, that all of Krishna's associates are expansions of his chit potencies, the same as him. So what Rupa Goswami is explaining, that there's Radharani, who's the Ladini Shakti, and there's Krishna, who is the Sandini, or the eternal potency, then the chit shakti is just all the bhavas, all the emotional ecstasies and devotional mellows that Krishna shares between himself and all his various expanded parts, who are all expanded from him, beginning with Radharani, Balaram, cowherd boys, gopas, etc. It's a little bit deeper understanding. Because the common answer is that Krishna represents chit potency or spiritual knowledge, Baladeva is Sandini or existence potency, Sat Chit, Sat potency, and Radharani is Ananda. But here, Rupa Goswami, he says that all these three, Sat Chit, Ananda, actually mean bhava. So this is just one point.